You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff editor at IndyCornRows.com. And joining me on the other line, as always, for now, the second time this week, is 8.9 seconds co-editor top dog, something like that, and Indianapolis Westview newspaper columnist Tony East. Tony, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm really happy with the Raptors and Spurs for giving us some content for our last two episodes a week episode.
Yeah. So, do you think
Thanks, everybody?
Do you think the Kawhi trade swung the East?
You know, it really depends how healthy he is, which is such a question mark. I mean, I don't really believe in the whole, like, he's not going to report and he's not going to play stuff. Like, I don't think he's that unprofessional of a person, and I don't think any professional basketball player is, but I do think the injury could affect how good he is. So if he's like 90% or 90 to 100%, no, if he's 80 to 100% of what Kawhi Leonard used to be, yeah, that swings the East quite a bit.
Right, they're the best team in the East if he's back to where he was.
Oh yeah, he would. I picked him to win MVP last year before he got hurt.
Well, I mean, think about it. It's the team is. I mean, you got a coach. That's the one concern is, can Nick Nurse coach? He's a new coach. That's kind of a concern. Yeah. But assuming that is pushed aside because they're a super deep team. They basically gave up DeRozan, but in terms of like depth, they really didn't give up anybody that was like, they gave up Poeltl, who was okay from off the bench, but what is not like a huge part of what they do, and they're still now 10 deep still because they got Danny Green back.
Well, I called DeRozan a big part of your depth.
No, but I'm saying everybody you lost, you're replacing with somebody of greater value. Sorry, that's the way to put it.
Because, yeah, I mean, Danny Green is really good.
Yeah, I know. I kind of thought that's like a throw-in, but he's really good. That's a really good throw-in to get.
Great player. So, I mean, DeRozan for 3 years is a cool haul for the Spurs, and I think Jakob Poeltl's really good. You know, he's really, really good on the offensive glass last year. He's really efficient as a scorer, but that's a good swing for Toronto on that risk.
Yeah, because even if he leaves in a year, I mean, I've seen it like, and I think in a year they get Kyle Lowry's contract off and Ibaka's, and then they're basically like just cap free, and they got to rebuild. But they were probably have to rebuild anyways because Rosen and Lowry were stuck in the former Pacer land of just mediocrity after mediocrity after mediocrity every year.
Yeah, exactly. And they got out of DeRozan's money, which everyone is saying is like, it's such a good thing. Like, DeRozan's a good player. Like, that's not.
Yeah, but it's not $28 million good.
Yeah, he is. Oh, yeah, he is.
No, I mean.
Yes, he is.
He is in the sense that every star player is underpaid. But in the sense of like of the NBA landscape, he's probably more at the low 20. I mean, Victor Oladipo made 21. That's about what he should make.
I think he's about fairly paid. He's a very good player. But
I just think. That's a really high contract for a guy who really hasn't shown he can.
Doesn't help you in the playoffs, and that's where the problem is.
Yeah, and so I mean, like, so I know he was complaining, and I understand the loyalty stuff like that, but I think ultimately, doesn't it fall back on him that if they had taken even the Cavs to like 6 or 7 games, he wouldn't have got traded because they wouldn't be in the same kind of like.
He wouldn't even think about it.
No, because they're like, we can win the East, but now that they got swept, so everybody's like, oh, they're Masai Ujiri, who's the GM, is like, we probably can't get anywhere. Is this team? We need to make some drastic change, otherwise, we're going to be stuck. So
Well, they got a new head coach and a superstar, so I hope that's the changes he was looking for.
Yeah, it really falls into Rosen and Lowry for what happened. On the flip side of this trade, though, right, isn't San Antonio known for their really good shooting coaches?
What's that guy's name? Englund, I think, is his last name.
Yeah, that sounds right. I couldn't remember. So you think he develops Rosen into a three-point shooter, and then Rosen is like one of the top 10
player in the NBA.
Well, he can't play defense that well because he's too small, yeah, but offensively he could be awesome.
Oh man, he would be so good. And I even think like Popovich is really keen on like split cuts out of the post, and you know, a lot, he just has a lot of good actions at his offense, and DeMar DeRozan sneakily is a pretty good passer. So I kind of feel like he would fit in really well to what Pop already kind of does. So outside of the 3-point shot, which the Spurs have no shooting now, by the way, which is so weird. DeRozan doesn't fit like horribly on that team.
No, and if you think about it too, he could if everything goes right, could he get to like James Harden maybe level if like the right coaching and the right kind of
Yeah.
If he got to that level, that would put the Spurs with Aldridge, him, back in the top four in the
West. I wouldn't say he'll ever get to Harden level, but he could get to like right below that, you know.
That's what I mean. Sorry, that's probably not gonna be an MVP level, but just that kind of like player where he has the ball in the hands a ton. And you put that with Aldridge, that team is, I mean, I know the West is loaded at this point. That's one of the top five teams in the West, which prevents them from having to rebuild, because Pop is probably on the last, what, three, maybe four more years in the league. I mean, he's in his late 70s, right? Or mid 70s.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it sort of helps prevent that rebuild. And maybe they don't have the cap space, and maybe something else happens. You can trade for one more guy, and then you build a big three, or you become the team that's like a Golden State injury away from competing.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, with Pop, you never know. Like, that Warriors team really thought they could beat Golden State 2 years ago before the Zaza stuff happened. So I think they, you know, if they don't get DeRozan to be like this stud 3-point shooter, I feel like they'll still be a really good team, because they'll have, you know, two really high powered offensive guys and DeRozan and Aldridge, and they have some good defensive players still. And they have the Spurs culture. You know, I still believe in them.
Yeah, they won 48 games. Is that the second best player in the NBA? Third best player? Really. Yeah. I mean, they in a West that had like, I mean, I guess it had nine legitimate playoff teams, but you had Denver, and they literally won 48 games in that kind of like loaded conference without their superstar.
Yeah, they're fascinating. And I like the trade. I really do like this trade for both teams. I really do. I know it's hard to like see it that way, but I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100% that.
I am terrified of, though, I think like there's a scenario where Kawhi is just not that great anymore and he loses a ton of value because he got traded. He can't get a supermax. You know, that would suck for him. I really like him.
Yeah, on the last part of this, though, can we just talk about the Lakers? Immediately got traded, saying, oh, we're fine. We didn't need to trade him. We're confident we'll sign him.
2 years in a row.
I know. I swear that tweet was just they like retweeted the tweet last year to Paul George trade. I mean, I get this team has a lot of comments. They signed LeBron, but I mean, the Lakers have so much just like hubris about how they're going to be awesome and they can get everybody. I don't know. Like if they miss out on Kawhi, then like what happened? Like who are they going after? What's left? Kind of, they have LeBron and a bunch of young guys.
Yeah, it's fascinating that they have that mentality after literally they just got burned by it. I think that's super funny.
And the only reason they got LeBron is because he wanted to play and wanted to live in LA. If he didn't want to live in LA, he would not go to the Lakers. Like it wasn't like a.
No, I thought it was and legacy stuff, but yeah.
You mean for LeBron, or you mean because the Magic kind of bring him in?
For LeBron, well, both, I guess.
Right. I mean, like, you look at the Lakers really since what they brought in Dwight Howard in the trade. They really haven't gotten. I mean, they got LeBron, but like in that gap, they were like a laughable team when it comes to free agency. Like Aldridge didn't even meet with them because they were kind of a laughable franchise for that 6 year stretch.
Yeah. That's true.
But I guess having LeBron there makes him a destination all of a sudden then.
Yeah, it does.
LeBron. But I don't know. I think it's a waste of LeBron's year 16 and 34-year-old year. I mean, who knows how long he can keep it up?
I bet till 35, the Kobe year.
Okay.
That's my official prediction.
Well, speaking of other players who have retired, nice transition there. Thanks, Adam.
Hey, there you go.
Roy Hibbert retired.
Roy Hibbert retired officially. What was his quote? It's it's something corny, like it's time.
Time to move on?
It's just time for me to move on. He's like 4 years late there, but yes, it is.
Yeah, so second best center in Pacers history behind Rick Smith?
Modern
history, I don't really know.
Jeff Foster would like to debate that, but
So I'm thinking – like in the NBA, so I don't know if
Dale Davis was a four, J.O. was a four when they played. So,
J.O. played power forward, I guess, in that lineup, right?
Foster they'd be modern centers, so I guess I can live with that.
I mean, I don't know. I think he's up there. I mean, I'm going to really use stats, but his 3- to 4-year run, especially in the playoffs, he was incredible for a couple year run when they were actually good.
That one, the first series against the Heat, he was like a good offensive player too. That's when he was amazing.
So let's see. I'm going to pull up his numbers from the playoffs. So that first year he put up seven. And that first they made the East Finals, the first time he put up 17 a game in the playoffs. But against the Heat, I think he had a bunch of 20-point games, if I remember right.
Yeah, that was the Heat series.
Heat series. He had 29 at one time in one game. I mean, he was a double-double machine. He had a 20-17 game. I mean, because the Heat were kind of playing Bosch at like a stretch five. They were sort of like trying to modernize, but it was right at that time before it became kind of hip. So Hibbert destroyed Bosch for a while. And then Bosch got hurt too in one of their series. But
he also destroyed Carmelo Anthony in like my favorite moment of his career.
I think that was the moment that ended basketball in New York.
That was insane.
And in Carmelo's any chance of him doing anything in New York, basically.
That was insane. He sent, it ended the game. It like changed the whole game and ended the game, which ended the series, which Knicks haven't been good since. Like,
yeah. Just insane. And I think as Pacers fans out there probably remember where they were when he made that block.
I mean, oh my gosh.
Like, I remember I was sitting at a B-dubs with all my friends in high school. And when I saw that block, I mean, I couldn't believe it was real when I first saw it. Just the way he like went one-on-one and then they showed the replay. And it was like, it was just incredible. I mean,
where were you when Roy Hibbert shot 40% from three, too?
What game was that?
Two for five, his the 13-14 season.
Oh, nice. I'll tell you what. I went to a game in the 13-14 season in Washington. I was on a school trip. I went to a Wizards Pacer game. And Roy Hibbert, I believe, he was that the year Paul George. No, sorry, it was 14-15. The year Paul George was hurt. And he basically carried the team in the entire game and went to overtime. He hit like this nice, I think, fadeaway jump shot. Maybe like 10 seconds left to tie the game. And then he took a three that rimmed out that would have won the game. I remember that.
My gosh.
I just remember that moment. He was. What's weird was at one point it was like the NBA was going to change to him, and then within a switch of a flip of a switch, it changed completely away from him.
Yeah, well, kind of. It was like the NBA was changing to him, and that every center would be good on defense. But they also forgot the youthful on offense thing, because that year he was like a 10-point a game, like 14-15, when he was still averaging like 10 points a game. It was okay, and then his Lakers season, and it just crumbled from there. Like, he had nothing on offense anymore.
Well, he was never, like...
good on offense.
Yeah, but he was like, kind of out of a Dwight Howard mold the same way. Dwight Howard was never, like, great on offense, but he was...
Dwight was amazing on offense. What are you talking about?
Well, I thought Dwight was, like, kind Dwight of like Howard? A putback.
Dwight was Howard? Future first ballot Hall of Famer Dwight Howard was amazing on offense.
Wasn't he more... I think you're overrating how good offense... I think he was a putback king.
Dwight Howard averaged 20 points a game five seasons in a row. I mean, Howard was amazing on offense.
But I don't know. I wouldn't say he was amazing on offense. I'm trying to figure out how I want to explain this. First of all, Howard couldn't shoot free throws, so that's a negative 100%. That's why Howard can't play today. But also, his offensive strength was like a putback. He was never like a go-to offensive player. You know what I mean? He was like never a post-up kind of guy. He was a feed him with the lob kind of guy.
Yeah.
I would say his offensive game more resembled DeAndre Jordan than it did like any kind of Shaq level.
Offense. I'd say it was a mend of the two in his prime when he should have been MVP.
What that?
In 2009.
Whatever. We're getting away because I don't really want to talk about Dwight Howard. I want to talk about Roy Hibbert anyways because.
2011 too.
What?
I'm sorry. I'm ranting about Dwight Howard not getting an MVP over Derrick Rose that year. It's ridiculous.
But what I really wanted, the point I was trying to make at the end of this was that after that, I think 12-13 season when they went to seven against the Heat. If Steph Curry's ankles had never held up, the NBA might have never changed to this like modern spread out offense the way it did. And the Pacers might have been the best team of the next 4 or 5 years. There's like that. There's that world out there.
There is that. And Danny Granger never gets hurt.
Well, yeah.
If Danny Granger and Steph Curry's injury histories flip, the Pacers win at least one championship.
Which is insane to think of at the same time. But I mean, also they have to give an ode to that team. Just that Lance Stevens and David West, him and George Hill team. And the spectacular way it flamed out at the end of the day.
It did. Oh, man.
And it was great. The low moment of Roy Hibbert when he made that no homo comment. That was after the game, and that completely lost all confidence in Game 7 going into the 2013 Game 7 NBA Eastern Conference Finals. So, you know.
I liked, you know what other Roy Hibbert moment I liked? What? None of y'all MFs are paying attention to us. You know, remember that press conference?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, I mean, at his best, Roy Hibbert was really, really good. Like, he could have, if everything went right, he could have been a multiple-time All-Star, maybe Hall of Famer someday. But unfortunately for him, the NBA within 2 years completely changed under him, and he became the most useless player on the court.
Oh, by a mile.
Yeah. And then,
poor guy.
And what's sad, if his contract had timed up better, he would have made a lot more money too in the NBA. A
ton more money.
I mean, he made $54 million, so let's not say he made nothing. But I mean, the way he was going, he was like, there was something in Grantland, I remember in like 2013-14 where they wrote about like the value of each player, and he was like a $25 million value. And like that was when the salary cap was in the 60s. So that's saying a lot for what he sort of was at his best.
At his best, he was a league wrecker.
Yeah. You have anything else to other Roy Hibbert highlight moments you remember?
Off the top of my head.
Anything you want to talk about Roy Hibbert-wise?
Not really. It's a shame that he never got to use his dominant prototype in a time where his prototype is actually helpful.
I'd say if he was 5 years younger, would he be a Hall of Famer? If he was 5 years like older, sorry. So like had come in the NBA when he was 2003.
Maybe, yeah. I like that idea.
You know what I mean? If he had come in right when Dwight Howard came in, it'd be him and Howard as the two centers of the last decade or whatever.
I think so. He got two All-Stars anyway.
Yeah, he did. He was – what the most frustrating part about him was is he never – he should have been Defensive Player of the Year, and he sort of – that 2013-14 season, he fell apart too much towards the end. Like, he was on pace to be Defensive Player of the Year, and he just sort of fell off the wagon, sort of.
Yeah, it's a bummer.
That whole era was a bummer because they were like so. I mean, they were as probably the closest they've gotten to an NBA championship since the 2000 team was. I mean, that's like what you felt, and maybe even closer than maybe the whole history of the franchise.
Probably. Right, so if they beat,
one of in it. Right. But if they beat LeBron in that series, they legitimately could win the NBA title, right? I mean, it's not like they were. It's like. They beat LeBron this year. We're still have to face the Warriors. It was like they're playing the Spurs, who were really great, but they could have beaten the Spurs.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I don't know. That's all I got left on Roy Hibbert. Take a quick pause, and then we'll talk about some interesting lineups. Because we're hitting the dog days of summer, where there's no more summer league, no more NBA rumors. Now that Kawhi got traded, there's basically not much left to have in the NBA except for training camp to open in October, I think, September. So we're going to start doing some basic lineup breakdowns kind of stuff, right?
It's time.
Yeah, so we'll do a couple a week probably. I'm writing a bunch for IndieCornrows.com. I might overlap them. I might not. I'll give Tony one I haven't written about yet to see how he reacts if we don't have the same one. But yeah, we're just gonna do this for a couple weeks, hopefully to add a little bit of content to our show, because honestly, we might struggle for content when it comes to mid-August.
Yeah, nah, we'll be fine.
we'll figure it out. So just keep listening to the podcast, but you can watch us struggle a little bit.
Don't sell us short like that.
No, we'll do fine. I'm just saying I will come up with the best topics. So also my second point was to be send us questions if you have them about anything Pacer related, and we would have to answer them because that will also help kind of build some of our content. Yes. You know, I know we did a big mailbag that was really nice, but send us anything, other questions you got, just because we're happy to answer them, because that will help drive our show.
We will. You guys can drive the show. We should have a guest of the week where we just like get a guy from Twitter on the show.
I don't know if I would like that. I'm not sure he would do that.
Anyway, will you want to do lineup talk more often now? Because it's fun to muse about what could be fun and what could be not fun. I don't know how we want to do it. I think we both came to the table with one that we wanted to talk about and why we would like it. Do you want to go first? Or you want me to go first?
You go first, because I don't want to have the same one as you, because I have multiple ones. So you go first.
Well, I only came with one. That's a good thing.
I have a bunch on a list. I've been making a list of a bunch of lineups, to be honest.
Oh, very fun. Okay, mine is Darren Collison, Victor Oladipo, Tyreke Evans, Thaddeus Young, and Kyle O'Quinn. I call it the Everyone is an Amazing Passer lineup.
Yeah, I guess you're right. How does it work? No, you're right. I'm just thinking, like, how does that work, though, with O'Quinn? Do they have enough shooting?
No, they don't. The plan here would be a lot of horn sets with Thaddeus Young and Kyle O'Quinn starting at the elbow. And you run your offense kind of through that. So a lot of split cuts with Oladipo and Evans coming off of those bigs. Darren Collison's out there just to space the floor, which in his own way, it's, you know, mini rant here. Darren Collison is not a shot creator in that he like can create a shot for someone else off the dribble or can create his own shot off the dribble. He's a shot creator in that he spaces the floor so much that everyone else gets better shots. So in that lineup, you know, he's a good passer, of course, but he's also, you know, he led the league in assist turnover ratio, but also, you know, he's spacing the floor for everybody and allowing everything else to move and flow. So I think having a good passing lineup like that, you know, you're just helping everybody get more open. Your passes are coming on the perfect time on cuts. I like the way it could work for like a little 5 minute burst of quick offense with fun passing. It makes the defense always chasing the ball.
Yeah. Can we just pause and say, remember Darren Collison shot 45% for 3-point? 46.2, right? Not 45.2.
Insane. Yeah.
I mean, that's insane. It didn't feel like he shot that well. Maybe it did feel that way, but like, it felt like he didn't take a ton of threes. I think he took maybe three a game. Maybe why didn't feel like super much, but he was like awesome. I mean, he was, it's really underrated of how important that 3-point shot was to the Pacers winning a ton of games.
Yeah. Like, I forget what group chat I was talking about this in, recently, but you know, that someone tweeted like, who's a better shot creator, like LeBron James or Steph Curry? And the point was supposed to be that LeBron is the better creator, but when we were really talking about it, we talked about what I just said. We're like, Curry doesn't create the shots by like crossing someone up and then making the help come and whipping it over the corner. He creates the shots by just standing behind the 3-point line and having
constantly moving.
Yeah, and constantly moving. That's exactly what DC did. You know, like he would initiate the offense by just throwing it into the play, and then he just cut around the perimeter, and they have to stay right on him.
Yeah, and if you left him open in the corner, he made you pay the way Stanley Steph would make.
Every single time.
And because he doesn't have the same kind of like hype or overall presence Steph does, he could get those corner threes a lot more than you would think he should for a guy who shot as well from three. Like he could easily kind of slip by a guy and they kind of ignore him, and all of a sudden he's open in the corner and drains it.
Exactly. And O'Quinn and Thad and Tyreek and Vic could find him in the corner in my hypothetical very good passing lineup.
Yeah, but my worry is O'Quinn is kind of just out there.
I think my worry there is wing defense in general. You might have to put Thad on the other team's best wing defender.
No, I think Evans. You could probably put Evans or Oladipo on him.
You could try. It would be tough.
I think people
really underrate how good Kyle O'Quinn is on offense. You know, he can't shoot a lick, and I understand why that's a problem. But I think his passing is so good, and he that just shows that he understands what's happening around him, and he'll be out of the way when he needs to be, and he can duck in at the right times. You know, I just like his fit with other players on the team, even though he won't play that much.
Yeah, and if you can post him up and have him pass out of the post, that would be huge.
Yeah,
because you'll have. You
know, remember last year when I had like a minor orgasm on that play where Al Jefferson caught it in the post and did the deep handoff with Corey Joseph? Oh, that was beautiful. Kyle O'Quinn would be even better at that.
Yeah, I mean, Sabonis is pretty good at that too sometimes.
Yeah.
He hits the ball at the top of the key. And a lot of times what's really good is because you'll have three shooters, you can then have Thad cut to the rim. And Thad is as the king of like the backdoor pass over the head layup.
Him and Vic had that timing down. And like you could use the same lineup I just had and insert Sabonis, but I just wanted to say O'Quinn because he's a little bit better of a passer than Sabonis.
So my biggest fear is in this lineup, you catch Thad on one of those 0-for-10 days and he's like hoofing the rim and he hits everyone at the back end of the rim. That was the most frustrating part of Thad all year was he'd have these occasional games where he literally would be in front of the hoop and could not score.
Could not score. He had one in the playoffs. Remember that?
Yeah. Kyle's had one too.
Yeah, I mean,
Oladipo had one too. I mean, it happened to everybody in the playoffs, it seemed like.
It did happen. Ugh, it did happen. But you hope
now they have the experience it won't happen. You know, they'll have that kind of.
Yeah, Thad had an 0-for-5 game, an 0-for-7 game, 1-for-9, 2-for-11, 3-for-12. They just were
sprinting. It wasn't a ton, but it was like, it was like I said, it was 4 or 5 times probably the whole year, but it was
related.
Just like,
they lost a lot of these games.
Well, no, because the problem too, when he couldn't hit a shot, he just kept forcing it. Like it was the kind of thing where like he should just recognize, I can't hit anything today. I'm just going to pass everything out.
Yeah,
but it's whatever. I like this lineup though first a short period of time, and because I have a feeling once Bunchen will get hurt for some period of time because it happens to centers, they always miss because they're big clunky guys out there. You know, I mean, even Sabonis, he hurt his ankle Sabonis had the flu last year for a little bit, should have missed games if Turner was healthy. So I imagine you definitely could see this lineup for a little bit. And you know, I like O'Quinn as just the third center because he's a huge upgrade over Jefferson, but triple like this lineup because you chose three guards. I did something similar.
Yeah, I think it'd be fun, and I like the three guard idea too. Yeah, we're big fans of the three guard Phoenix Suns, so maybe it'll work here too.
Yeah. So one, this is a big thing that. So I read the George Karl book a couple years ago, and he talks about the three guard offense, and Nate McMillan is kind of a George Karl disciple. So that's a big thing that I think even you saw McMillan, he'd run it a decent amount of times with like Oladipo, Joseph, and Collison, or Stevenson would be in there, but he'd be kind of a guard too. So I picked a lineup where I chose Corey Joseph, Oladipo, Evans, who am I, fourth and fifth? I believe I picked Bojan and then Turner.
Yeah, yeah, that would be cool. Bojan at the four is just my favorite thing.
Yeah, I'm just thinking how much he's going to play the four this year. And if he could become a stretch four, I know it's like kind of a huge stretch one. He was like kind of a shooting guard almost 2 years ago. But if he can become kind of the stretch four of this team, I mean, it would change the whole dynamic for the Pacers because they all of a sudden could play. They could really play. They could play Oladipo at small four. They could make Durkin lineups. Like it would kind of change the whole dynamics.
Yeah, absolutely. And it worked a little bit in sports last year too.
Yeah, and I mean it would work in when other teams play their own stretch four, right? Because Bojan should be able to guard the other team's stretch four. I think part of this year too, I would love to see McMillan sort of change the starters up at times based on who the other team is playing at. Because like you can kind of adjust better. So like a big thing was Tobias Harris killed the Pacers all year. They played him six times, I think, they ended up playing it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He played four with Detroit and two with the Clippers. If McMillan was thinking ahead, he would have sort of probably – I guess you can't really bench that at that moment, but you would have – it would have been smart to put that on the bench and shift Bojan to the four at that moment and let Stevenson play the three, and that would have been at least a better lineup probably. Or at least with Stevenson, this year you have a better version of season. With Evans, you can actually do that without the offensive drop-off.
Yeah, I agree. I think that would work really well.
I just like that lineup because the lineup I said just because they can all shoot threes too. It would just be like, and you get enough defense with Joseph in the lineup instead of Collison.
Yeah, and I love a bunch of shooting. I'm a big fan of spread the floor.
Well, I think this lineup is good enough on defense to not get destroyed. Like if you did a lineup with like Collison, Oladipo, McDermott, Bojan, and Turner, it would probably get destroyed on the defensive end of the floor.
It definitely would.
But the Evans and Joseph has enough defense to the guard position, and Evans can play small forward in small spurts. Like this could be an end of game rotation depending on who's hot during the day.
I agree. It'll be fun, and I like end game lineups because it makes the starters not matter anymore. Like Corey Joseph played more minutes than DC last year because you know injuries. He fits in with a lot of guys. Well, injuries too. But he just fits in with a lot of dudes. You know, I forgot about the injury when I said that. but he just fits in with a lot of dudes. He closed some games. You know, that's what really matters.
Yeah. Do you think Corey Joseph is the answer at kind of the future point guard for the Pacers?
He's
only 26.
Maybe.
He's only 26.
Maybe. If he can get to above average 3-point shooter, yes, for sure.
Right. He'll turn 27 in August. But I mean, he's at the right kind of age where he could be, you could sign into a multi-year deal and you wouldn't get killed because he wouldn't be in his 30s yet.
Right.
He shot, what do you think he needs to get to? He shot 35% of three. He needs to get to like 37, 38.
Yeah.
You can get there.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he started off way above it though. Remember, he came like caroming down. So you got to worry about that.
Yeah. He has kind of a clunky shot though. It's sort of a slow, doesn't quick release, but I think that's all we got for this podcast, right?
Yeah, we'll do more lineups going forward. I don't know what we'll do Monday. I don't want to keep doing lineups over and over, but yeah, I think we're good for now.
Yeah.
Send me a lineup on Twitter. I want to hear about some other ideas.
Yeah, we're going to go to the once a week starting after this podcast, so probably every Monday or Tuesday. Maybe a little later in the week, but we'll post that. As always, you can read Tony in 8.9 seconds. He's doing a lot of posts, to say. We meet at anycorners.com. You can follow Tony at TeastNBA. Me at FreeMadden5 and our podcast at Locked On Pacers. As always, send us questions you want to our Locked On Pacers or at me or Tony, whatever, and we'll try to answer them on the podcast to kind of drive content. All we got for this Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, have a great rest of your day.